a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready?
What's going on here?
Earth's resistance is futile.
This, indeed you are, Paul,
is...
in my hand, Paul!
Fan Effect.
To say that the last two episodes in the Star Wars movie saga have been divisive among the most dedicated fan base would be an understatement. 2017's The Last Jedi and 2019's The Rise of Skywalker seem to have caused, well, I'll let Clive Revel, the original Emperor, tell us.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
In general terms, those who did not like The Last Jedi seem to be pleased with The Rise of Skywalker, and conversely, again, this is general terms, those who liked Rian Johnson's take in The Last Jedi have been less than pleased with the choices made by J.J. Abrams in The Rise of Skywalker. But then this week, we suddenly got another option, or at least a possibility of something that could have happened with Episode 9 with the supposed leak of the original script Colin Trevorrow had written before he was dismissed. Hi, I'm Andy Farnsworth, and welcome to KSL's Fan Effect podcast presented by Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters. In this episode, I'm joined once again by Deseret.com entertainment editor and my Star Wars movie marathon buddy, Herb Scribner. Herb, welcome back once again.
Thank you. I'm here with double the power to speak.
Yeah, we have extra mics, so we decided to hook them all together and just see if we sound more cool with the deeper voices. So before we get into this, and maybe for Star Wars fans who didn't see much about this or kind of are intrigued, or maybe you're a casual Star Wars fan and you wonder kind of what all the talk was about. Originally, the sequel trilogy, as it's been called, was going to have three different directors. J.J. Abrams would direct what he called The Force Awakens, Rian Johnson, The Last Jedi, and Colin Trevorrow, he of Jurassic World 1, and that's kind of his, that was his big stake. They made this decision right after Jurassic World 1 made a whole bunch of money at the box office. And then he made another movie that tanked, and I don't even remember what it was. And then suddenly, by the end of 2017, right about the time The Last Jedi came out, or shortly after, they announced that Colin Trevorrow would no longer be making or directing Episode 9, and the official term was, quote, creative differences.
Oh,
so that's
it.
The reset. People wondered if it was because Colin Trevorrow's last movie sucked and maybe he wasn't as good as they thought. There was a lot of rumors then, and there will probably be a lot of rumors forever. Yeah. Even if we ever get quote-unquote official sources or a sit-down interview, everybody always wonders if that's just this is what you're allowed to say versus this is what you actually think. The same way many people say Mark Hamill really hated The Last Jedi, and it was only after Disney got on his case that he started to backtrack that.
Mm-hmm.
Not because Mark Hamill could have had different opinions without Disney telling him what to do, but it's much easier to kind of imagine it that way. And to be honest, in today's day and age of PR, and you deal with this, Herb, in entertainment stories that you do, we never know if we got the actual what somebody actually thinks because there's too many ramifications of stars saying the wrong thing. You know, recently, in fact, I think it was this week, Will Smith famously told one of the late night hosts he was on, look, I always tell you that you want to see my movie, but this one, I really do mean it, meaning that he doesn't always mean it. So now we come to the big news of this week. Colin Trevorrow wrote a full draft of Episode 9 before he was dismissed. During the week, we get a Reddit thread, which if anybody who's ever been on Reddit.com, you got to take a lot of what you read with a grain of salt. It could be 100% accurate. And in fact, probably everything that's ever been kept a major secret has been revealed on Reddit before the major secret was made public, you know, like if there's a plot twist in a movie, someone's got it on Reddit.
Yeah, the Star Wars leaks.
Yeah,
somebody
finds a subreddit and then they just post. And then half the stuff's made up. Or I heard of a friend of a friend of a friend of mine said Han Solo is actually Luke Skywalker. And so
that'd be a twist.
Right. So that's what Reddit is for people who maybe aren't very familiar with it. So there was some skepticism going into, well, what is this script and is it actually legit? Now, from what I read, and I read many, many articles on this over the course of the week, they believe that this leak of the script is legit. Like, this was actually a draft that Colin Trevorrow had written. And that's what we're going to talk about then, Herb. We both read a bunch of different things. Nobody has the full script. That's one thing I think I should make clear is I don't believe the full screenplay is out to be read. What we've got is mostly people who are supposedly sources familiar with the material tell us what it is. But we did get as much as the actual opening crawl that had been written.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think they wrote that until after they'd started putting the, like, once they actually started putting the whole story together, they would fine tune exactly what the crawl would say. But apparently for this draft, and according to the sources, it was dated December 16th, which would put it a couple of weeks before Carrie Fisher passed away.
Yep.
And so back to what I said at the beginning, which is to say that The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker have been divisive. Well, this just adds fuel to that fire and gives those who were maybe less than happy with the direction that The Rise of Skywalker went more fuel for that fire. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of fun to imagine, hey, what could this have been like?
Yeah. And I think going on your point of the opening crawl, it's very, it seems very vague. So I think they probably wrote like this like draft of one. But it's interesting to see that this, though, a Reddit thread has caught on so well with like the media reporting on it, like multiple, everyone's writing about it. So part of me wonders, like, is this because of the backlash that everybody wanted to kind of like have this like cathartic moment and have like, oh, this is what could have been. But there also seems to be a lot of places, like, I don't know if it was AV Club or Vulture, one of those places said that they also confirmed it independently.
Yeah, no, it was, I feel confident that at the very least, most of what we're reading was something that Colin Trevorrow had hoped to take the story. But the fact that it is news and all that stuff, it's kind of a commentary on us. And I will put myself in a little bit with the fans, because I've made no secret that I really liked The Last Jedi. And I was sort of kind of in the middle, lukewarm on The Rise of Skywalker. I liked it fine, and I accept that that's what we got. I'm not, you know, going to sign a petition. Let's get the Trevorrow version made.
Yeah, that's,
you
know, not going to happen. Yeah.
You know, unlike The Last Jedi, there was no second treatment. So this is the first time we've ever had a completely alternative possible Star Wars story. And maybe that's part of what makes this so interesting is if you think about going back, George Lucas wrote Star Wars. So whatever he says happened, happened.
Right.
It is interesting if you go through, there's been books written about the making of some of the movies. There's even a comic book series called The Star Wars that I want to say Dark Horse Comics put out that Marvel has the rights to now and that you can read if you get a Marvel Unlimited subscription, which is you can read like a 30,000 different Marvel back issues on your tablet or on your computer. They have that series, and it was somebody took one of George Lucas's first script treatments for Star Wars, one of his early screenplays, and they animated it out. Like, they drew it into a comic book as if that's what the movie was. So you'll see names and planets that you know from the Star Wars canon, but like Deke Starkiller and Anakin Starkiller and Darth Vader's there, but somebody Skywalker's. It just things that were then later changed and eventually became canon.
Yeah.
You can kind of see maybe where George Lucas was going that with that in the first place. But up until now, that's about the only thing that we could say where we could really ponder where the story could have gone different. They took all the books and made them not canon any longer.
Right.
The Legends timeline from the stuff that Del Rey published over all the years. And then they started to have one unified story focus. So, yes, there's bonus material so to speak, if you want to read the books or if you want to read the comics that Marvel has been publishing. But, you know, everybody just kind of sticks to what's on screen.
Yeah.
The novelizations of the movie sometimes can add just a little bit more. With The Last Jedi, what I found was the novelization had all the deleted scenes. By the time I saw the deleted scenes, I'd already read them.
That's
interesting. And I was like, oh, wow, that really helps the story. I wish that was in the movie. And then I find out, oh, I can actually watch it when the deleted scenes came out on the disc.
What's interesting, though, about Rise of Skywalker is I noticed in the last, since it got released, there's been a lot of talk about the, I think it's called like the Visual Dictionary, which has like a lot of these like added things. And I think there was even like some reports about like what that book says about like how Palpatine came back, and it talks about like it has like a bunch of things in there that like are not in the movie.
Yes.
And I know there were complaints that like, well, now you have to buy a book to understand a movie.
Yes.
And
those are fair complaints, I think.
Oh, totally.
I mean, the best story is one that's self-contained and that you don't feel like you have to go somewhere else to understand it.
Yeah.
That they create like a universe that you want to find out more.
Right, right.
Is also a comment on the storytelling, even if the movie doesn't do a perfect job of telling it. But, you know, I think of like the Harry Potter world, very visually descriptive when you read the books, lots of details. In fact, some people complain that the movies don't include enough of the details.
That's fair.
That they liked. But then people who watch it aren't saying like, well, none of this made sense. I actually thought that the Harry Potter movies did a good job of adapting what they needed to adapt for the core story. And then I always looked at the books as sort of like deleted scenes and the DVD extras, for lack of a better word. So I tried always to watch them because I saw the first Harry Potter movie before I read any of the books. Okay. And I enjoyed it. And as I walked out of the theater, I heard people complaining, oh, they left out this. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's so terrible. But I didn't feel like I had been shortchanged anything because I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
And so that was when I said, you know what? I don't want to feel disappointed. And I tried to watch the movies and then read the books, which meant I had to wait 2 to 3 years between each book that was already published. And I finally had to give up. By the time the Deathly Hallows book came out at the same time that I think it was the Order of the Phoenix hit theaters. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to get this stuff spoiled for me. I better read the books so I can at least have some of the surprise left for myself.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And then, so I saw the first 5 movies before I read the books, and then I read the last 2 books before I saw the movies.
Okay.
And I guess what? I left Half-Blood Prince thinking, oh, I really think they did not do justice to Harry and Ginny's kiss.
Wow.
But that's what I'm saying. So like, I suddenly turned into that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get too diverged onto Harry Potter. But
right.
But up until the sequel trilogy, it was whatever George Lucas said.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you read some of the making of, it's interesting to see how close it came to maybe being, you know, Han maybe dying, or, you know, if Harrison Ford's contract, they didn't get it worked out for Return of the Jedi, they were just going to leave Han frozen in carbonite. That's an unceremonious end.
Oh, yeah, that would have been way weird.
When you read about the writing of the original trilogy, Leia was not always Luke's sister.
Mm.
Leia was Leia,
right,
and Luke was Darth Vader's son. And when Yoda said there was another, there was some talk, or at least George Lucas had been kicking, reportedly, I don't know if it's written down anywhere, but people who knew him at the time talk about how at one point he was considering Luke was going to, at the end of Return of the Jedi, Luke's quest was to go and find that lost sibling.
Yeah.
So he was always going to be a twin. But Leia wasn't necessarily the other twin until sometime during the writing of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So it's fun to think, oh, wow, how close did we come to Luke and Leia not being siblings? And then the kiss in Empire Strikes Back isn't very weird. I will point out, though, and maybe I've done this before, Leia always kissed Luke.
Yeah.
No point does Luke kiss Leia. Just saying.
That's true. That's a good point.
She kisses him before they jump the Death Star trench.
Yep.
She kind of kisses him when he gets out of the X-Wing.
Yep.
And she really lays the one on Hoth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, that's true.
For people who get all, it was Leia that was doing all the macking.
That's true.
Luke was just enjoying it.
Yeah. I've heard those reports about like how he was supposed to have a sister in like another galaxy or something. It was something and that's those things. And even like going back, like there's all these reports about what the sequel trilogy was going to be and how it was going to be like focused more on, I know they throw around this term like a microbiotic world.
Yeah, his early treatments that he sold with the script, and really we only have kind of Bob Iger's description in his book,
right.
The Disney CEO. I don't know. Nobody was going to be happy. We've said this in all of our talks about Rise of the sequel trilogy, Rise of Skywalker, is that there was no way everybody was going to be happy with whatever we got.
Right.
But with George Lucas writing it, you kind of couldn't argue with it. You could say, I don't enjoy it. Like, you've gone downhill since the originals. And that would be, you know, an argument I think you could easily defend.
Yeah.
That the person making the argument could easily back that up. But when you get to the sequel trilogy, now that it's not owned or run by George Lucas anymore, technically, everything is fan fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
Technically.
It feels that way a lot of the time. It's missing that George Lucas touch, you might say.
Now, is it enjoyable? Of course.
Yeah.
It made $3 billion. Those three movies have made over $3 billion.
Yeah.
I think we've enjoyed them.
Yeah.
And even people that didn't like The Rise of Skywalker, maybe aside from our Adam Thomas, who just hated it, you know, most people found something to enjoy.
Yeah.
Whether they had quibbles with this or that. But it's all fan fiction. So This is the first time where we got a full story that could have been made.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
Right.
And we got The Rise of Skywalker. So let's do, for those of people who haven't read about it, let's kind of run down what happened in Colin Trevorrow's leaked Star Wars Episode 9 script, which appropriately, whatever you want to say, was titled Duel of the Fates. I'm sorry, I'm just going to use any excuse I can to play this. Yeah, John Williams' best work right here.
I love it. I love it.
Dun, 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 dun.
I wonder if Duel of the Fates would have used Duel of the Fates.
Absolutely it would have.
Right?
Absolutely would have.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of sad we didn't get to hear Duel of the Fates during The Rise of Skywalker. Kind of hope they'd find a way to fit that in there somewhere.
That was a huge letdown because it was in the trailers and they made it seem like it was going to be a part of it, but they didn't. That's a whole other thing about how, like, I remember there was all this hype that John Williams was going to use all the prequels and, like, the sequel and the original trilogy songs in his score.
Yes. Well, he did, kind of.
He kind of.
Have you listened to the score, like, the CD and stuff?
I thought it was going to be a little more upfront, like, yeah. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. But Duel of the Fates, love the title, love, yeah. I don't know if it would have stuck, but I love it.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. I wanted to have some fun with this, so I'm going to read the supposed crawl, and there's only one way to do that.
Yes.
Star Wars is shooting down the screen right now. Episode 9, The Duel of the Fates. The iron grip of the First Order has spread to the farthest reaches of the galaxy. Only a few scattered planets remain unoccupied. Traitorous acts are punishable by death. Determined to suffocate a growing unrest, Supreme Leader Kylo Ren has silenced all communication between neighboring systems. Led by General Leia Organa, the Resistance has planned a secret mission to prevent their annihilation and forge a path to freedom. Actually, I think that's the end of it. I'm not sure. I maybe read that too fast.
It also seems shorter than a normal crawl would be, right? It seems a little shorter.
Yeah. You know, maybe somebody else has the crawl that I just missed, and just to see, because somebody had the whole thing written down. No, that's pretty much it.
That is it. Yeah. It seems shorter.
It did seem shorter. Like I said, maybe that's something they planned to fill out or adjust as they went along in the process. So, according to Colin Trevorrow's script, that sets the table.
Yeah.
Kylo Ren has silenced communication between systems. That's why the signal from the Resistance didn't get out. The Last Jedi.
Just made that connection. That's clever.
And so Leia is sent a secret mission to prevent annihilation, forge a path to freedom. They start off, I believe the movie actually begins with Rose, BB-8, and somebody else stealing a Star Destroyer.
That's awesome.
Which sounds like a kind of a cool thing. Whole bunch of divergences. So just some of the highlights in particular. Kylo Ren and Rey's Force connection is not revisited as it is in The Rise of Skywalker. Kylo goes full villain in this, doesn't come back. And if you want to read it all, you know, go ahead and it's literally all over the internet. And each website seems to have a different take on each thing. Instead of Palpatine coming back, Kylo finds a Sith holocron, which, if you're familiar with the expanded universe, is like a repository for knowledge, whether it's Jedi or Sith. For lack of a better word, it's a little cube generally, mm-hmm. or a triangle, and inside it is somebody's teachings, like a hologram of Palpatine. And in this particular case, the recording was for Darth Vader, and Palpatine had a contingency plan for Vader if Luke were to kill him. Vader's supposed to take Luke to a system that there's some disagreement as to what it's called, the Remnicor system, to see somebody named Tor Valum, who's a master of the Sith and Palpatine's teacher. Some other things that go on. Lando organizes. Once they finally are able to get the message out, Leia sends Lando out to kind of collect everybody, kind of similar to what he did in Rise of Skywalker. But this time he goes and says, you know, hey, they were trying to tell you, but you didn't come. And one of the analysis I read is something I hadn't thought of with Rise of Skywalker, which was that in the other one, Lando rounded everybody up.
Yeah.
So, like, they just didn't want to come for anybody else?
Maybe.
And I didn't think of that. And that just sort of undercuts, like, Leia.
Yeah.
They got the message out. Well, they heard us and they're not coming.
Right.
It would kind of be a way to pick it up of that way they get to have that heartbreaking moment in The Last Jedi of we're really on our own.
Yeah.
And then you find out, oh, there were some people that would have come to help us.
Yeah.
But because of the First Order, they never heard about it. And now this then begins the buildup that brings finally everybody together to finally put an end to the First Order.
One thing I liked about that first part in regards to the Emperor's contingency plan, having read the Aftermath books in the Expanded Universe, the canon one, there's a lot of talk in there about Palpatine having a contingency plan.
Yes, that was in the Shattered Empire comic series.
Yeah, and I think that because there is like all that talk about contingency plan, I thought that fit in as a really nice conclusion to that, that there was always like a backup plan for the Empire. Because, like, in Rise of Skywalker, it kind of seems like there's a contingency plan, but it comes off kind of like
this was the contingency plan.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, it's, I like that little nod to that, and it really ties it all together really well.
So, other things from Duel of the Fates. Rey stays a nobody, only this time it turns out Kylo Ren killed her parents on orders of Snoke.
Love that.
The big battle takes place on Coruscant because that's where the First Order goes, is they go back to the capital of the old empire, which was Coruscant. And General Hux is now kind of Supreme Chancellor Hux, while Kylo Ren sort of runs the fleet and, you know, goes around, does some things. Some of the places they visit the Kuat shipyards, which is kind of famous from the expanded universe. The Legends timeline now. Let's see. Rey creates her own lightsaber. It's a double-bladed one from the remnants of Luke's lightsaber and her staff, which I think is what she did with her staff at the end of...
Oh.
I mean, I know she had... It looked like her staff, only it was a yellow lightsaber.
That's interesting.
So maybe that's a similar kind of a thing. The sacred Jedi texts that she kind of took from Octo... They're the ones who tell her about the Force beacon beneath the former Jedi Temple. That's what will allow them to get their message out without the First Order jamming it because it's older technology.
Oh, yeah.
There's some talk about like kind of a Rey and Poe romance a little bit, or at least it hints at it from what the reports say. Luke's Force ghost trains Rey and then goes and haunts Kylo every so often, which I think would have been kind of a cool thing to see. Rose, Finn, R2-D2, and C-3PO go to Coruscant to try to turn on that emergency beacon. Rey, Poe, and Chewbacca go somewhere else to try to find where Rey's supposed to go. And then Kylo, actually, at some point, he finds the Sith Master, who's a Lovecraftian. I'd probably have to look up what that means.
Yeah, I have no idea what that means.
Probably some race that exists already in Star Wars, maybe, that we would... Oh, that's what they look like. I heard it was like tentacles or something or other.
Okay.
Any rate, he gets trained and he has to have like sort of a dark side duel similar to what Luke did in Empire Strikes Back where he fights the Vision of Vader. Kylo fights a vision of Vader and loses.
Oh.
And Kylo decides that Vader's failure was allowing love to cloud his judgment.
Mm.
Now, to me, that goes to, I will finish what you started.
Yep.
The whole thing, all that stuff was about Kylo becoming a new Vader.
Right.
And I kind of thought that Rise of Skywalker didn't really address that, which I thought odd because J.J. wrote the first one. Wouldn't he want to answer those questions too, you know,
yeah.
other than Vader's mask getting like falling through space and landing wherever, whatever planet Kylo was on when Rey was in his quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What else happens in this this other one? Oh, they begin a citizens' uprising around First Order headquarters on Coruscant. Finn, R2, and 3PO. Chewie flies an X-Wing, I guess.
I love that they... first off, I love that they go back to Coruscant. I think that's great.
Yeah, that never made sense to me, why Coruscant, which was the capital of the Empire and the Republic, isn't mentioned. Now, I get why the New Republic would move to a different system.
Totally.
Like,
totally.
That actually makes sense as far as... We want to start anew, and so we're not going to go back to the old place.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the fact that this global center, I mean, it was like the center of the universe kind of a thing, is never mentioned once. They don't go there. They don't look at it. They don't talk about it. They don't say, well, now that the Republic's destroyed, what's happening on Coruscant? Like,
yeah. And they reference it in those Aftermath books. And what's interesting, I just put this together. So, in those books, there is like this weird like citizen unrest there, and there's like people don't know how to feel because it was the capital, but now they're like losing the Empire. So that actually ties into all that with a citizen uprising. And then what's also interesting is that I wonder with the Jedi Temple Force Beacon, I wonder if that would be the same beacon thing that's used in Revenge of the Sith. To like,
yeah, no, I think it was a specific callback to that.
That's so cool. That's like such a cool tieback. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
The other big change is sort of the whole finish. And this might be one where, you know, again, this is all speculation since it never happened. But the final showdown takes place on the planet Mortis, which if you've watched The Clone Wars, there's a 3-episode arc in one of the early seasons where it's like a planet where the Force is actually embodied, the light side and the dark side, by the daughter and the son. And the son embodies the dark side, the daughter embodies the light side, and then there's the father. And at one point, Anakin gets a glimpse of his future, including the Darth Vader mask.
Mm.
And then they wipe his memory at the end so he doesn't remember it.
Interesting.
Because, you know, and it's pretty cool. I remember being really surprised the first time I saw it, like, oh, wow, that's a cool story. Props to Dave Filoni for coming up with that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's where this final battle between Rey and Kylo would take place, is on this planet of Mortis. During the showdown, they sort of suck the Force energy out of each other like Palpatine does to them in Rise of Skywalker. And Rey finally beats Kylo, but the Force ghosts of Luke, Yoda, and Obi-Wan appear and try to save Kylo. But because he's so far gone, it just says he's, and this is in all the articles I read, the quote was exactly the same, extinguished. And apparently Han Solo appears and talks to Kylo at some point during the movie, which doesn't make sense if he's never redeemed.
Yeah.
I thought that Han's talking to Kylo in Rise of Skywalker, first of all, that was possibly my favorite part of the movie.
That was great.
And it was that great bookend to their scene on the catwalk in The Force Awakens, like we talked about in our review. Now, you may actually have to read several different articles if you want to get the full details, because it seemed like every article had different pieces of the plot, or, you know, maybe they just wanted to focus on a specific thing for the point of their article. Let's take a break right here, Herb, and when we come back, we'll talk about what were each of our thoughts. Now that we've given the plot of, you know, what supposedly was going to happen, what do we think of that? And would we have liked it? Let's do that when we come back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Okay, Herb, we've talked about what happened, or at least the supposed plot of Episode 9, Duel of the Fates. Duel of the Fates. There we go. That never was actually written. One draft was written. Lucasfilm decided, and Kathleen Kennedy and Disney decided to go another direction, and they hired J.J. Abrams to take over, and that's what he did, and we got The Rise of Skywalker. So, having gone over that plot synopsis like we did, tell me your thoughts on what would you have thought of this particular episode, Duel of the Fates, and would you have liked it?
Yeah, I think okay, so baseline, I probably would have liked it. I mean, I liked Rise of Skywalker, so this sounds a little bit better, at least in terms of plot. I like the callbacks. I like that there are these little moments that make you think, oh, that is classic Star Wars. Like we said, Coruscant, the Jedi Temple, Mustafar, because that's what it seems like Kylo spent some time there, Mortis. Like, these are all callbacks that I think would have been, they seem less fanservy and more like natural, like, oh, this would happen. I also liked, just from the beginning, it seemed like it's a more natural next step for the trilogy, because you leave Last Jedi and, like, you feel like, okay, like, Kylo Ren is a bad dude now, right? Like, he's so focused on killing Luke Skywalker, and he's, like, so, like, full of rage. And so, like, then to open this third movie with him being, like, not only in charge of everything, but also, like, so into the dark side that he's even saying Vader didn't go far enough, I think that's a natural next step. And I like the way they kind of had General Hux, like, become a chancellor, and, like, the political, like, aspect of it returns. And
you believed him more as that than a spy for the Resistance?
Yeah, yeah. That was so goofy. That was, like, a classic, like, I feel like that was a classic Marvel movie scene, but, like, it didn't fit the new trilogy. I don't. But I think what also, one of the things that I know a lot of people have written about that really sounds good about this movie is that it brings the Resistance versus First Order thing to a conclusion, because in Rise of Skywalker, it's more the Resistance versus the Final Order, and it's
almost like the Empire again.
Yeah, and you don't really even know where things end, because, like, to me, like, they defeat the quote unquote Final Order, but that doesn't mean they defeated necessarily the First Order, and because, like, and you don't really get a sense of, like, okay, the First Order and the Resistance had that, you know, everything happened in Last Jedi. You would imagine in the year or so in between the two movies that, like, the First Order would make some political moves and, you know, take over this or take over that. And so this version, Duel of the Fates, would definitely have, like, cleared all that out, at least based on this initial script idea. So,
okay.
I like it. I would enjoy it probably. It didn't seem a little very heavy on, like, lightsaber battles, so I do wonder with that battle on Mortis if that would have lightsabers in there.
I'm sure it would have.
Yeah. But that's what I thought. What did you think?
I actually was really intrigued by it. As somebody who thought that the fan service was a little heavy in The Rise of Skywalker, as much as I enjoyed the cameos and the different things, I felt a little distracted by them at times. My biggest problem with them bringing the Emperor back was the fact that there was no real hint at it.
Yeah.
Especially in The Force Awakens.
Right.
But, I mean, I get from the overarching 9-movie saga the idea of having, and I think that's what Kathleen Kennedy had said, and Chris Terrio, the writer for The Rise of Skywalker, if you have questions about the script, he's been all over the web doing interviews and talking about different things, and I don't think he's getting too many hits. I think he's getting fewer hits than I personally kind of wish he would get, but he is out there, so if you have questions about why certain things happen, he has explained many of the ones that I've wondered. Whether you, again, going back to what we said at the beginning, whether that's the truth or whether that's what Disney wants us to hear, who knows? But for me, as I read it, I was like, oh, that would have been enjoyable. I think in a lot of ways, this, at least what I read, felt like something I would have enjoyed more and that I would have, I might have, let me rephrase it, I might have felt more satisfied at the end of if something close to this had been made when I left the theater, whereas when I left The Rise of Skywalker, I just kind of felt neutral. That was what the thing that surprised me about Rise of Skywalker is how I left feeling neutral. I left The Force Awakens feeling stunned.
Yeah.
And I really was reeling from Han Solo's death. I left The Last Jedi the first time, you know, kind of trying to grapple with seeing Luke not the way I wished that he was.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend who was part of the podcast at the time, he was really down on this version. He did not like what happened to Luke. But the second time I saw The Last Jedi, I was just like, oh, man, that was even better than the first time. So I really felt an emotional connection to it. And I just didn't, I just felt sort of numb by the end of Rise of Skywalker. And I don't know if that's necessarily that movie's fault or if it was me or there could be a lot of things. When I saw it the second time with you, I still felt like, okay, I liked it about the same amount.
Yeah.
The second time didn't convince me to like it more, but it also didn't make me like it less. It just was solidly right in the middle.
Yeah.
I feel like if the movie that we read about from Colin Trevorrow had been made close to this, I feel like I would have felt more, I don't know, emotionally connected to it. I might have been more, whoa, by the end of that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would have been happy because I kind of liked the Reylo romance a little bit. I the more I've thought about it, the more obvious it is that Kylo had to die because the horrible things that he did, you can't just sort of be good. There was an alternate, an Elseworlds Star Wars timeline that Dark Horse Comics did where they supposed, you know, what if Luke had died on Hoth?
Oh, interesting.
And so what happens is that, how does this work? Either Leia goes to train with Yoda and Darth Vader tracks her to Dagobah, I believe.
Uh-huh.
At some point, Vader changes and he paints his suit completely white.
Interesting.
And he turns back to the light, but he still needs the armor to breathe.
Right.
So now he's like Light Vader. Instead of Dark Vader.
Yeah. Interesting.
But, you know, that opens up its own can of worms, as in, like, Leia wouldn't just be like, oh, Dad.
Right. Yeah.
Or anything to that effect. And the rebellion and the galaxy that had been punished by Vader and the Emperor wouldn't be like, oh, you're good now? Well, all right, then. I guess everything's okay.
Yeah. Kylo Ren, if he had survived, I imagine he would have, like, gone to some kind of jail for, like, war crimes. Or
he'd either have to live in hiding, and Rey would have to have a secret office romance with him.
Yes.
Which would have made it the more forbidden and the more alluring.
Yeah.
This is so terrible. We shouldn't be meeting like this.
Yeah.
But in this one, he doesn't turn back and he dies anyway. He's extinguished. And that leaves Rey to kind of keep going on. There was a line that I read in a couple of different articles where Leia sort of allegedly told Rey, hey, you're not like my father or my brother. You're new. Your story isn't written by anyone else, which, of course, it is because it's all imaginary. But within the story, she tells him, like, you don't have to be like the archetype. To me, that line fits what Rian Johnson was trying to do in The Last Jedi, which is break the status quo. George Lucas talked about how these things rhyme. If you watch the making of the prequel trilogy, he's like, you know, we're doing this thing that's similar to what was in the trilogy because it's kind of like a poem. You've got lines that rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly J.J. and Chris Terrio and Ryan were kind of supposed to try. And I feel like obviously J.J. tried a lot harder to have it rhyme than Ryan did. He just said, no rhyme in here. We're going to be one of those fancy modern poems that are just random words or sentences that they tell you is a poem, but you be darned if the average person would be able to know how it's a poem. If it doesn't sound like a limerick or have lines, words at the end that rhyme, I don't know. How's that a poem?
How's that a poem? Yeah.
So I would have enjoyed this, but there's a big caveat here. One of them is that scripts, first drafts, undergo heavy revisions.
Yeah, they totally change.
So reading this, it's impossible to say because we wouldn't have got that movie.
No, yeah, true.
First of all, Carrie Fisher died.
Right.
So that great line, we never would have got it unless they were willing to try to ape her voice and do some CG.
Right.
Would we have been okay with that? I don't know. I personally don't hate the attempts to use the past people.
Yeah.
Like when we did Rogue One and there was, yes, I noticed that Tarkin's face didn't look exactly right. I did.
Right, yeah.
And there was sometimes it was a little distracting because I always knew deep down that Peter Cushing has been dead for a long time.
Yeah.
But I so much would have rather had that. Well, I don't know. Now I'm going back and forth in my own mind because the guy they got to look like Tarkin in the at the end of Revenge of the Sith, he doesn't have a line on screen.
Mm-mm.
He at the very, very end when the Vader and Emperor are on the bridge mm-hmm. looking at the Death Star skeleton, he comes up and like hands him something and folds his arms and grabs his chin or something like that. But I saw a picture of the dude because
mm-hmm.
StarWars.com at the time put it out. And I was like, oh my gosh, that looks a lot like young Tarkin.
Interesting.
The problem is that's young Tarkin.
Right.
And
right.
we're dealing with Rogue One. We're talking about Tarkin minutes before,
yeah,
minutes before we saw Peter Cushing as Tarkin blowing up Alderaan.
Right.
So I would have probably been more okay with a CG Leia than the average person.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with the way JJ, you know, tried to just use existing footage.
Yeah, I've always been, I don't mind the CG either.
The only other way would to have Leia die before the movie starts.
And that's the camp I'm on. I think that would have been a very powerful opening if they did something like that. If like it opened with her passing away or...
General Leia Organa has died.
Yeah. And they're all gathered at her funeral.
I don't know.
Yeah. The cool thing with this script too, the interesting thing that I picked out was that, you know, you have the whole Kylo Rey thing in The Last Jedi. And then in this one, like Kylo admits that like one of Vader's problems was that like love, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it would have been interesting if like they could give the Reylo fans a little bit of stuff in the beginning, like make it seem like, oh, they are falling in love. And then Kylo realizes, oh, love is the problem.
Yes.
And then he commits to the dark side even more. And I think that's that way you get a little bit of the Reylo, but then it turns out, oh, like, yeah, he's not about it. He's not about it.
One of the things that I agreed with is in an article on theringer.com that talked about it. And I found myself agreeing in large part with the author, Ben Lindbergh. One of his arguments was that this new plot would have justified the need for the sequel trilogy better because it did new things. And because The Force Awakens was so similar to Star Wars and The Rise of Skywalker was very similar to Return of the Jedi with a space battle going on while a Palpatine duels a Skywalker and a something or other, at least this would have had it go in its own direction. Maybe you would have been upset to see Kylo Ren dead or Ben Solo dead. Or, you know, Leia did say, I know my son's gone.
Right.
I did kind of like how she kind of saved him at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
A mother's love saved him. That's something that I personally relate to really well. And that stirs emotions. And maybe it doesn't in other people or maybe people who didn't have a great relationship with their parents. But to me, that was a powerful moment. And so I liked if Leia had died before the movie, we wouldn't have had that moment. And yes, it was all computer trickery. And they lead off somebody who you can't see their face to the bed to lay down.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I do believe that footage of her holding the medal was her holding Han's medal.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In The Force Awakens, in a scene that we never got to see,
yeah.
Is that she was holding Han's medal, and that's what Maz Kanata gives to Chewbacca is Han's medal that Leia had when she died, and it's like a keepsake for him, but it's also kind of an awarding of Chewbacca the medal he should have got all along.
Yeah.
But to me, the problem is if the Rise of Skywalker had been a little more well-received generally, what would this script leak have been like? What do you think? How would we have reacted to this script leak?
Are we assuming that...
We're assuming that everybody generally loved the Rise of Skywalker in its current form.
Yeah, I think this would have been...
Or even in a different form, but it wasn't like Colin Trevorrow's script.
You know, I wonder if that were the case, I wonder if the leak would even happen. I wonder if the leak happened as a result of like all the like controversy, because I think, you know, leakers put this stuff out for a reason, and maybe it would have leaked years later, but I don't think we would have got it so soon, because we never really got leaked versions of even like the early drafts of Last Jedi or The Force Awakens, right? So
part of me wonders if it would have even leaked. But let's assume it does. I think people would have been like, oh, that's cool. Or like you maybe would have drew more connections. Because there are things, and I know JJ and Chris Terrio said that like they didn't even read Trevorrow's script. But there are things in here that you're kind of like, oh, like.
Yeah, you definitely didn't read any of it. Any, if yeah, that's
like,
true.
I'm like, there's a lot of stuff in here that you could see like the finished product is in Rise of Skywalker. Because there are little things that like, you know, there is still like boarding a Star Destroyer. There's still like stuff with Force energy that they kind of raise up. There's some like Sith temple, Sith eternal stuff that they kind of touch on. So I don't know.
I would have thought, I mean, if you go just based on what we got from the Rise of Skywalker, I think I would have bought it more if Kylo and Rey being a dyad mm-hmm. had been Palpatine's plan all along.
Oh,
does that make sense? Like yeah. the way he was able to suck himself back to life. That's a terrible way to phrase that. But the way he was able to take the energy from them and restore his physical form. If that had been his plan all along to where, you know, he tells her to kill Rey knowing that she wouldn't, it would make more sense. It would actually make more sense if he said that to where he's like, oh, wow, look at this. A dyad in the Force. How cool. Right. I shall take advantage of it. And suddenly now I'm at full power.
Yeah.
Just in time for the resolution of the movie. But if he'd have said something like, that's why I had Snoke open the connection in the Force between the two of you.
Oh, yeah, that would definitely make more sense.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It felt like there would be that little thread that would reinforce it a little bit better. But again, Lindbergh's article on The Ringer is the one that I found myself most closely aligned with in people's opinions. And one of the key things was towards the end, and he said it so well that if I try to pretend like I'd said it this way, I'm just straight up copying him. But the idea that even if the script's a fabrication, the fact that it addresses so many of the most divisive decisions make it kind of suspicious.
Yeah.
And then the final conclusion was it reflects the desire of Star Wars fans for a different finale than the one Disney gave them. And that goes back to what I was saying about it's all kind of fan fiction. I said, and I don't think it was on this podcast, but it may have been. If I didn't say it on the podcast, I definitely said it to my friends or family. When we first found out there was going to be new Star Wars movies and George Lucas wasn't going to be involved, I said I generally was nice about the prequels. While people were bagging on terrible dialogue from Lucas or how he seemed to have forgotten what made his movies interesting in the first place. And those were opinions of people who I think are really well read and people who studied film. And, you know, I don't consider them to just be, you know, the stereotype ignoramus fat guy
right.
who has his Star Wars toys out all yeah. day long, even though he's 40 yeah. and he just can't accept that Darth Vader didn't just murder all the Jedi
right.
the way he wanted to see, because Lucas addressed that specifically. He said, I know there's going to be a lot of people that kind of just want to see Darth Vader going around killing Jedi. He goes, but that's not the story that we wanted to tell.
Right.
But I said, okay, now we don't have George Lucas anymore. This means that I can be critical of this
yeah.
in a way that I was hesitant to do to the guy who invented the universe.
Yeah.
Because I can say, look, George, I really wish you hadn't done it this way, but it's your universe.
Right. It's his.
I'm playing with your toys.
Right.
So, okay, this is what I got. And I almost think that in some ways, Star Wars fandom has come to that realization after 20 years because they don't bag on the prequels in the same way that they used to.
No.
Jar Jar Binks, I think, will always be bagged on.
Yeah.
Except by little kids, who he was designed for.
True. That, yeah.
Even little kids today think Jar Jar's funny. My kids think Jar Jar's funny.
It's a kid's
exactly.
character.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But with this, I can be critical because the only reason that J.J. Abrams' vision is what happened to Luke and Leia and Rian Johnson's is because Lucasfilm and Disney said, yeah, okay, this is good. Well, this is what it is.
Yeah.
So people who hate The Last Jedi, I mean, I can't convince them otherwise, but I also believe they kind of have a right to feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same thing with people who didn't like my biggest beef came from where J.J. Abrams started all the legacy characters.
Mm-hmm.
I've said that many times. And that's okay.
Yeah.
We're dealing with fan fiction, even though now this fan fiction has been made canon.
Yeah.
Wasn't one of the complaints about the final season of Game of Thrones? It wasn't George R.R. Martin's
yep.
resolution for the characters. It was Weiss and Benioff's resolution of the characters.
Yeah.
And theoretically, I mean, at least for Game of Thrones fans, theoretically, maybe, if he doesn't die of old age or a heart attack, you could get the ending to the series that the original writer had envisioned.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's
You'll never get to see it.
Right. You won't see it, but
you'll get to read it and at least have that. This is from the person who invented them, and this is where he ended them.
Right.
And we don't get that with Luke, Leia, Han, Chewie.
No, we get fan fiction. It is fan fiction at the end of the day. Yeah, and it's very, like, convoluted and, like, all over the place fan fiction because, like, even, like, the way J.J. started his vision of the series, the trilogy, is it doesn't feel like that's how it ends, right? Like, it seems like it's a different vision because they have Rian Johnson in the middle. And that's why, like, even though when the Trevorrow stuff happened and they brought J.J. back, I remember, like, I was kind of excited because I'm like, oh, it'll be cool. Like, you know you're going to get, like, a solid J.J. Abrams Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then part of me started to think about it. I'm like, well, like, I think you have to either commit. Disney should have either committed to J.J. the whole way, just let him tell his story, or they should have committed to having three different directors. So when Trevorrow didn't work out, they should have just brought in a third person, whoever that is. Like, maybe it should have been Favreau. Maybe it should have been anyone. I just think that when you have, like, all, like, two and then one in the middle that's different, like, it's going to make that trilogy seem all over the place, and it still does,
yes.
Right?
And it does, absolutely. I wish... Oh, I have so many wishes, but... I wish that there was some story that could sort of unite Star Wars fandom again. I think The Mandalorian, and we talked about that in The Mandalorian podcast, which is available for download if you want to become a subscriber to Fan Effect.
Download it.
We talked about that one comes pretty close.
Yeah.
As it's united a lot of the fractured fandom.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there is a story that would bring everybody back together. Maybe it's not possible. We've had 40 years in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
We've had times where we thought the universe was going, the Legends timeline, which, yep. To be honest, once you got into the Yuuzhan Vong invasion,
yeah.
I stopped reading. I wasn't interested anymore. Once they killed Chewbacca,
yeah.
Spoiler, sorry, for this book that's 25, 30 years old. But once that happened, I wasn't interested anymore. And yeah. I know why they had to do it. I knew it made sense on a theoretical level.
Yeah.
But after that, I didn't want to read it. And eventually, Han's son murders Luke's wife. And
that's where I started Luke
finally gets a lady and then his nephew murders her?
Yeah, it's pretty insane. But I thought it was like, it was kind of cool to follow it and like read about it and like know that there is a larger story. And it wasn't horrible. It was just like all over the, it got crazy, right? And it's like, how long can you follow these characters and...
Well, the answer is as long as you reboot them.
Yeah, true.
Maybe what that means is that we only like the characters in this certain window. And so think of Star Trek reboot with J.J. Abrams.
Right.
Instead of going further than the Next Generation or further than, you know, the last Next Generation movie or Voyager, we're like, let's go back to where we liked it and let's just try to do more stuff in there.
Yeah.
Rogue One, prime example.
Yeah.
Why is Rogue One liked, loved? Because it went into that place that we already liked.
True.
In some ways, you can't fault Disney for the decisions they've made based on our choices as consumers.
Right.
Maybe if we had been more receptive of the new changes, we would have got more like that.
Yeah.
Maybe not. And maybe if we hadn't, you know, fussed so much about how much we loved Rogue One because it was in that era that we loved... Maybe we would have got something different for Rise of Skywalker where they didn't feel like they had to pull in so many callbacks to the original.
Oh, interesting.
You know, we've sort of made a case with our dollars and our online complaints that we really like this part of Star Wars.
Right.
And we've become loudly complainant about parts we don't like of Star Wars. And so Disney buying away from George Lucas, who was going to make what he was going to make, whether you liked it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for better or for worse, he wanted to try different things.
And I think that's why...
And he wanted to use Star Wars to try those different things.
I think that's why the next movie, whatever it ends up being, is going to be, like, super critical or crucial to this, the next phase of fandom. There's the talk of it happening in the High Republic era, right? Which is...
Right.
Years and years and years and years and years before, like, the prequels. And so, like...
that's going to be crucial because it's going to be, and it seems like it's going to be, right, it's not going to be connected to the Skywalker family, and so it's going to be crucial. They have to, like, they have to nail it. They have to nail it, because then it's like, okay, we can get committed to this new part of the universe, these new characters, this kind of thing. If I'm them, like, I don't even, and I, again, like, I don't, I'm not a Disney executive, so maybe I'm totally wrong here, but I would not.
Not yet.
I would not do any callbacks or call forwards, whatever you want to call it. I would not reference any of the future movies. I mean, you could, but
my,
like,
name is Ricky Kenobi. What?
Yeah, like, I don't need
that. Did you know that someday your great-great-great-grandson is going to be Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Oh, it'd be so weird. I mean, I guess, like, if it's, if it takes place 1,000 years before or 800 years, you could, like, maybe, I don't want anything. I don't want any Yoda. I don't want any, I just want.
See, I don't want him to go into the past.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, and we found this out, when you can't go into the past, it's difficult to go into the past in a technological story, like a technology-based story.
Mm.
So science fiction, I mean, science space opera, whatever it is. If 1,000 years ago the ships are as good or better than the X-Wings, then what's the problem? How come they can't evolve? Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
If you go too far into the past, it brings up questions of, for a pretty advanced society, they sure move pretty slowly in advancements.
Well, I remember hearing that about the prequels, is that, like, I remember people would be like, the one thing I never understood about the prequels is, like, why are all the ships better than in the original trilogy? And you can make an argument that, like, the Rebellion's using, like, the washed up broken ships, whatever. But, like, yes. but you're right.
We didn't get to see any planets other than where the Rebellion was hiding.
Right. So if you go back,
so you could have seen opulent ships maybe in the original trilogy era, but we just didn't get to see them.
Right,
they
true,
were just
true.
Off screen. Like, if the camera would have turned just a little, you would have seen it.
You would have seen the cool ones. Yeah, yeah. No, but you're right though. Like, if you keep going back, and then it's like, well, this is all futuristic technology. So, like, how do you turn that back? I agree with you. I think it would actually be cooler to go, like, way in the future.
Yeah.
And just, like, leave everything behind. Because, like, that's the other thing, too. If you go far back enough, like, there's already some, like, established, like, lore and stuff like that. And then you also have to know where it's going to end. But if you go way in the future, you can do whatever you want. You could do anything you want with these characters because it hasn't been written yet.
Well, honestly, and I think you and I talked about this in one of the earlier podcasts. Maybe it was during our Star Wars marathon. I don't know. But I know I've said this, too, is, I kind of, in some ways, wish, as much as I loved, and I do love, I'm glad we got to see the legacy characters on screen.
Yeah.
I feel like this Kylo and Rey story with all the new characters almost would have been better off without any of the legacy characters.
Yeah.
Because it just, it forced us to ask too many questions and too many links back to the original trilogy. And, you know, if they had just stayed in the realm of legend, you know, to where I thought Luke Skywalker was a myth, and then we could have had him say, no, I actually met him before he went into exile, before he died or whatever, or my father knew him.
Right.
And that way we could say that they were there, but they're just as legendary to the characters in the sequel trilogy as they are to those of us watching the sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
One of the meta things that I loved about Rian Johnson's was his ability to make Rey me. I was Rey in The Last Jedi.
Right.
I wanted Luke Skywalker to go save the day with his laser sword and face down the whole First Order.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Just like Rey did.
Yeah.
And when all of Rey's arguments to Luke were the arguments that I would have made.
Right.
Even as a fan, if I got to Last Action Hero style step into the movie, I'd have been like, come on, Luke, what's the matter with you? I saw how you saved the Empire and, you know, you got to do all this stuff. And so then when I watched The Last Jedi the second and the third and the fourth times, then I saw how Rian Johnson had made me Rey in
right.
the movie.
Yeah.
Rey represented all of my thoughts, feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I was just as frustrated as she was.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought that was pretty freaking awesome little bit of filmmaking there to do that to me. I mean, from the trailer, this is not going to go the way you think. We just thought he was talking to Rey.
Yep.
He was talking to us because we were Rey.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And I just thought that was so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you with the legacy characters. I don't think they were handled right. And it just kind of, it almost seemed forced.
like in a lot of the sense, and I think even with
forced. Nice job there.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, but like you said, like, and you brought this up when we talked about this before, and I still, and now I can't get it out of my head, but they never really addressed, and I don't even think they did in the books anything, why Han Solo didn't have the Millennium Falcon.
It got stolen from him.
And it's like, what world would that happen? That's not happening.
Right.
He's like a resistance general or rebellion general in the New Republic. I'm sure he got some fancy, cool place, whatever. And I just think it also cheapens it that he, like, him and Leia didn't work out. I mean, I could understand the logic behind that, but, like, also it's like, well, then what was all of that for? Like, it would have been nice if they had stayed together, but I guess you had to have motivation for Kylo and all that, but that's all coulda, shoulda, woulda. But I agree with you. I think the legacy characters heard it, so it'll be nice to go to a place. It would be nice to go to a place where we don't have to worry about legacy. We don't have to worry about this is where the galaxy has to be in X amount of years, so you can't do anything too crazy.
Yes.
I'd also like, I mean, this is...
This is the challenge with time. Adam Thomas does a great job of pointing, when we've talked about this on Star Trek, one of the challenges with the show Enterprise, which took place before all the other Star Trek series, even though at the time it was the latest one, was it tried to set up, you know, at one point during one season, they tried to set up this big cataclysm. Is the Earth going to be destroyed? Well, duh. Obviously, it wasn't destroyed because all the series come after it.
Yeah.
So where's the tension? And you could argue, okay, well, for them, they don't know the Earth is going to be destroyed. So if you can get on board with trying to see it from their perspective, and I can accept that to some extent because I try to go on the ride that the director tries to take you on.
Right, right. True.
But if does the Earth get destroyed is a lot more powerful if we're looking at, you know, something 10 years after Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, the story hasn't been written yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's the risk of time travel is if you try to tell stories in the past, you're already limited because, you know, you can't go to the places that people would recognize and tell a story that has any emotional drama or that threatens that thing that's going to be around later. Like, nobody thought that when Anakin force-choked Padme that the twins were going to die.
Right, right, true.
Or that everybody knew that there were twins already.
Yeah, so you knew there was no stakes there.
So some of that was gone. It was just...
And you knew she died, so you know.
Actually, I thought she died from the force choke originally, and then it turned out she didn't, and then she just died of a broken heart. And well, we don't need to rehash that. We did that in the... in our Star Wars movie marathon recap, which is also available for download.
Download
if this is your first time listening to Fan Effect.
Yeah, but you hit on a good point. Like, maybe, I guess I was a little too harsh about fan service, but, like, wouldn't it be cool if, like, the next Star Wars movie takes place, let's say, 1,000 years in the future, and they do all this stuff and whatever, and maybe there's, like, a super killer weapon, right? Let's say there's another Death Star kind of thing.
But see, that would just bug me.
Yeah, But we've
done the super killer weapon.
Yeah.
I would be more believable if there was a super killer virus.
Okay.
I would be more okay if it was an old-fashioned, we're actually going to try to militarily control each planet.
And it'd be cool if...
We own these sectors. Almost like what would have happened if we'd have watched the Clone Wars take place or if we had been given a thing to where we see the star systems and where the border was between the two... Star Wars has already done the planet killer weapon to death.
Yeah.
Literally.
I think it'd be cool, though, if, like, whatever that, let's say it is a super virus and it took out, like, everybody on a planet we knew from the original trilogy or the sequel trilogy or the prequel trilogy. Because then you have all the context, but it's not like they're, like, rehashing the old movies again, right? Like,
yes.
That's one thing that I think the sequel trilogy actually did poorly was revisit old planets. Because, I mean, there's like Exegol, there's Kajimi, there's, you know, Jakku.
I don't
mind
so many
seeing new
planets. What bugs me is seeing another desert planet that's not Tatooine.
Right.
Or
right.
Jakku. Like, really, this whole galaxy and everybody wants to live on a desert planet?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because where did they go in the Rise of Skywalker that was a desert planet?
Yeah, whatever that one was.
With the Burning Man party. Like, it's like,
how many of these are this exact same climate? And that's why I liked like Crate. Like I thought that was wicked cool because it was like the salt and the red.
The red underneath it.
Yep. That was cool and unique and new. Octo even in a sense is kind of new because it's like just an island and then like, or islands, I guess you could argue. And so I think that's, you're right. That's cool in a sense, but it's just like, yeah, so it'd be cool if they added that context where it's like, and I love the idea of like a super virus. That would be super cool.
I mean, that's the only thing I can think of where you could threaten lives on a galaxy-wide scale.
Yeah.
Clone Wars, by the way, Star Wars Clone Wars, that's one of the plots of one of the episode arcs.
See? Take that out.
That's what I'm telling you. Dave Filoni has got his finger on the pulse.
Yeah, he needs to be focused. He needs to be like at the head of what happens next. I like put him, Favreau, Watiti, all these guys, put them in a room together, let them do it. Let them just
do it. The Feige method. What's our next long-term arc?
Right.
What is it?
Right.
They learned that trial and error in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
But then they got it.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see what the next arc of our Marvel movies is because they've done the one really well, and now they're not going to want to try to repeat that in the same way.
Right.
So who knows what we'll get. But this is where we are, you know? I hope, you know, my earlier question was, is there one story that could bring all Star Wars fandom together? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
We're a fractured enough world, yeah. And movies will always reflect to a certain extent where we are. The original Star Wars was a commentary a bit on the Cold War, but also a bit on China and Russia, sort of the big bads,
right.
With the undertonings of all the Imperials had English accents and all the Rebels had American accents.
Ah.
So all these things are woven in,
right.
that would either consciously or subconsciously speak to us.
Mm.
And it... You know, the prequels coming out during the Bush era and the post 9/11, you start to see people trading liberty for security because that's what was happening in the real world. And that seemed
smart.
To dovetail nicely with what the Emperor was doing of, oh, you know, we're under attack and we have no choice but to grant me more power so that we can end this conflict, even though he happened to be playing both sides of it. The rise of, you know, somebody who can consolidate power. How could somebody consolidate power like that? And then we see it.
Hmm.
So there's not going to be a story, I don't think, that can unite everybody together again. Just because as a group, we're way too fractured.
Yeah. And that's interesting now that I'm thinking about the sequel trilogy. If you put it in those kind of contexts, if you think about how it compares to modern history, I don't think the story really has that the way the prequels and the original does. But the impact of the movies.
I mean, you had an opportunity with Kylo Ren to really explore the entitled mentality.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to paint everybody with that broad brush.
Yeah.
Because not everybody is entitled, but I see it with my own children, and I have tried to go to great lengths to not have them exhibit an entitled mentality.
Yeah.
But in prosperity and in peace, that's what it creates often. And then that creates the next round of conflict. If everybody's right, then nobody's right. And if everybody's right, what about when two people disagree? How can they both be right? Well, then they eventually fight about it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
See, how many times can I say the word right? But that was a chance. I thought they could have gone to a little bit deeper, and that would have been more of a reflection. But then maybe they felt that pull to have to try to tie into the greater saga.
Right.
And like I said, we can't go back in time. We can't change it. I'm not going to bag on the Rise of Skywalker.
No, I like it.
I'm not going to say that the Duel of the Fates, oh, I wish we'd have got that. I only say I wish we could have got that because I would love to see a whole bunch of different versions.
Yeah, yeah. It'd
hurry
be cool.
And film them now while everybody's, or many of them are still alive. Get as much into the can as possible and then do what you can with it later. But
yeah.
We are where we are, and I accept what we've got. Do I like it as much as the original trilogy? No. Do I hate it? No. And that's where we are.
Yeah.
And let's see what we can get going forward. I respect people's efforts. They are working with things. My ultimate, I don't remember if I said this to you in a different one, but ultimately they were on a time deadline.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the biggest culprit for dissatisfaction was we had to meet a deadline and this is what the best we could do within the deadline.
Yeah.
And so that's it. That's what we got. And that's what we got.
Yeah, and that's it. And that's, you know, and like you said, I'm not going to bag on Rise of Skywalker. I actually, every time I see the poster, I want to watch it again. So so it is what it is.
And you're going to own it.
Yeah, I'm going to own it.
And I'm going to own it.
And there'll be more Star Wars movies. There'll be more Star Wars Disney Plus. Star Wars isn't going away. Nope. And we'll get more stuff.
And there'll be some that we do like and some that we don't like.
Right.
For 30 years, we had three movies and we liked all three of them.
Right.
There was some disagreement, but as the next three came out, the original three kind of jumped to a higher stratosphere, but only because now we had six movies to compare instead of three.
Right.
After the original trilogy, what was your least favorite of the Star Wars movies?
Oh, right now?
Just the original trilogy.
Just the original?
What was your least favorite of the three?
Return of the Jedi.
Okay. Now, of the prequel and the original trilogy, what's your least favorite of the six?
Attack of the Clones.
Okay. So where does Return of the Jedi fit in there?
Oh, gosh.
Is it five? Is it six? It might be six.
It might be four or five.
Okay, but suddenly there's two more that are below it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, as
we have more to compare,
they're
going to fluctuate their place.
That's true.
Some are going to be quality. Some we're going to like more. Some we're going to like less. But the point is that we actually have some stuff now to choose between.
Yeah. My friend told me about that when I was giving him my rankings for all the movies after doing the marathon. He was telling me that, like, Empire Strikes Back, A New Hope, Prime. And then he's like, but it's really hard to rank the next few because it's like there are so many and obviously it's going to fluctuate. Like, I don't hate it.
And how could you move one of the newer ones ahead of your favorite from the original trilogy? You've been loving that movie for, depending on your age,
right,
30 years or 20 years or 10 years. And this new one isn't going to just jump in. Right. I mean, your first time watching it, you'd be like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I walked out of Attack of the Clones, as I said, I was blown away the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
Now I'd rank it lower than where I felt walking out of the movie.
Right. But like you said, I mean, you said this on the Marathon podcast that, like, it's not like we hate these movies. It's not like we're not going to watch Attack of the Clones if it's on TV or if we're, you know, like, is it going to be our first choice? Maybe not. But we still like these movies. They're still, like, good.
Yes.
So it's not like, yeah. And like you said, and this is actually funny enough, you talk about entitlement. It's kind of funny because it's like, yeah, there was a world where you had three movies for so many years. And like when I turned nine, that's when The Phantom Menace came out. So I thought it was cool. And like, oh, now it's like, oh, Star Wars is back. But I couldn't imagine being around for like 20 years and you didn't have anything. And now here we are. We
moved on. We didn't think we were ever going to get any more.
Right. And now we have 11 movies. We have three cartoon shows. We have a live action show and there's more on the way. So like,
and we have droids and Ewoks, but we're going to pretend those didn't exist.
Yeah, and there's plenty of fan-made films and fan-made trailers, and like there's books and there's old books that are non-canon. I mean, there's so much that, you know, you can find a good Star Wars story. There's comics. You can find a good Star Wars story if you want it, and you just have to look for it, and there's going to be plenty more. So let's just go for the ride. Let's enjoy it.
I think that's well said, and you know what? I can't think of anything else better that we could add to that. Nice. Hey, if it's your first time listening or you followed a link on social media, we've got more good Star Wars content in our other episodes on the podcast. So please check them out. You can access past episodes or even better, become a subscriber by going to Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or Spotify and searching Fan Effect. That's EFFECT. Tell your friends, share us on your social media feeds, and join us again soon. Herb, thanks so much for joining me again. Deseret.com entertainment editor. Always has good stuff going up. You can get the Deseret. Is it the Deseret.com app or is it still called the Deseret News app?
Deseret News app. Yep.
Okay.
And Deseret.com at Herb Scribner if you want to follow me. I love being on this podcast. Thank you, Andy, for letting me be on it with you.
We'll have you back as often as you're available. I'm Andy Farnsworth at KSL Andy's my Twitter handle. Andy Farnsworth KSL on Facebook, where I also do movie reviews, mostly family blockbuster. But, you know, I throw in some other stuff on occasion. But, hey, until next time, remember, we love this stuff just as much as you do.